course, we got a lot of important races locally, but Election Day is tomorrow nationwide, and there are some pretty significant races on the national level that we're following as well. Tom Jensen is the Director of Public Policy Polling based out of Raleigh. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website. You'll hear him tomorrow night here on the air talking about the local races, but he joins us now on the phone to talk about some of these bigger national races as well. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
Let's start with Ohio, where we've already had one iteration of a ballot initiative on abortion that abortion rights supporters won pretty handily, but it's back on the ballot again on Election Day. Where do things stand there?
Yeah, so what Ohio's doing that's a little different from most of the states that have had abortion votes since Roe versus Wade was struck down is they're actually trying to explicitly put abortion rights in the state constitution. So a lot of the things that people have been voting on have sort of been trying to stop rights from being taken away. And this is a little different in that it's really trying to explicitly enshrine a right. And we've done several polls on this issue in the last month, and we found that even though Ohio is a state that Donald Trump won by 7 or 8 points, both of his two elections, it looks like the legalizing abortion sort of permanently is in pretty good position to pass. We have it with about a 55% yes vote right now. So even if it does end up getting closer at the end, it still seems pretty likely that that's going to pass. And just yet another example of the way that abortion rights have sort of reshaped the political landscape some in the last year and a half, where voters have very consistently cast their ballots in favor of them.
And we're still we're now a ways out from that Supreme Court decision that struck down Roe v. Wade, and I know the reaction to it was really, really strong at the time. But as with every issue and every major thing that happens, like the thinking about it and the extent to which it's front and center in people's minds kind of dwindles and diminishes as we get further away from the incident itself. But is the reaction to it at the ballot box changing at all? Like, are we still seeing the same degree of pushback or movement towards the Democrats or abortion rights supporters now than we saw like last year at this time or a year and a half ago?
Well, we really have so far in 2023, and tomorrow's going to be the interesting test of whether that's still keeping. I mean, there have been a number of special elections across the country this year, many of which the Democratic messaging was very much focused on abortion rights. And in those special elections that have happened across the country, Democrats have done on average 7 or 8 points better than Joe Biden did in those same jurisdictions 3 years ago. So it's been a pretty consistent overperformance for Democrats in those kinds of races. And the big question is just, you know, all of those races were in May or August, places, times that people aren't necessarily used to going to vote. So what's going to be really interesting to see is tomorrow with the regularly scheduled November election that people are used to and always have, will Democrats continue to have this persistent advantage sort of fueled by the abortion issue, or are things going to level out a little bit more when it's an election where turnout will be higher than it's been for these ones earlier in the year?
With that in mind, turning to a couple of states that are generally even redder states than Ohio, where Republicans tend to dominate, Kentucky and Mississippi, where you've got two potentially pretty close gubernatorial races where the Democratic candidate is doing better or significantly better than you might think if you just look at the partisan makeup of those two states, right?
Yeah, in Kentucky, you have an incumbent Democratic governor, Andy Beshear, seeking re-election against the state's Republican Attorney General, Daniel Cameron. And that's a race that Andy Beshear's been up the whole campaign. He's somebody who, even though it is a very Republican state, he's sort of fared very well with voters when it comes to sort of like general leadership. Kentucky's dealt with a lot of natural disasters. He's come across well in all of those situations. He came across well during the peak of COVID and that sort of thing. When we did a poll in August, he was up 49-41. But what was interesting when we did that poll in August, when he was up 49-41, every single undecided was a Republican-leaning voter. And it's just people who have to decide, I like Andy Beshear. Do I like him so much I'm willing to vote for a Democrat, or am I going to end up going to my Republican instincts at the end? So that's sort of going to determine what happens there. And that's sort of what's going to determine what happens in Mississippi, too. You have a situation there where there's a Republican incumbent governor, Tate Reeves, who's quite unpopular. The Democrats are running a statewide elected official, Brandon Presley. He's actually one of Elvis's cousins in Mississippi. And the big issue in that race has been Medicaid expansion. Mississippi is one of the last states in the country that hasn't done it. Voters in the state do support it. And Brandon Presley, the Democrats, made that a core part of his platform. We did a poll there 3 weeks ago that found the Republican leading only 46-45. But then again, it was the same situation when we looked at the undecideds as it was in Kentucky. The undecideds were all people who dislike the Republican governor, Tate Reeves, who's pretty unpopular, but they're Republicans at the national level. They also hate Biden, and they're probably people who vote for Republicans 95% of the time. So if Brandon Presley is going to pull off the upset there, it's going to require him to get a fair number of Trump people to decide they're willing to have a Democrat for governor.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is the website, talking about some races that are going to be on the ballot on Election Day in other states besides North Carolina. And closer to us is the contest for control of the state legislature in Virginia, which seems to be very much up in the air almost every time we have an election cycle that takes us into Virginia. It's been very, very close between Republicans and Democrats for the last few years, and this seems to be no exception.
Yeah, you have a situation right now where Democrats have control of the Virginia State Senate, Republicans have control of the Virginia State House, and Republicans are trying to flip the Senate and get full control of the state government since there's also a Republican governor. Democrats are trying to at least maintain and perhaps even grow their level of control in the legislature. There's a couple interesting things about these races that have some national implications. One, we were talking about the abortion issue earlier. Republicans have really tried to make Virginia a test case for sort of staking out a more moderate position on abortion that keeps it from being as big of a political liability for them as it's been other places. So what they're sort of running on generally is saying that it's okay to get an abortion in the first 15 weeks of your pregnancy, but not after that. So they're trying to sort of come across as being sort of having like a reasonable compromise position on abortion, and they're trying to paint the Democrats as the extremists. The Democrats don't want any restrictions at all, and Republicans aren't trying to tell you you can't have an abortion. They're just restricting when you can have an abortion. So it's going to be a very interesting test case of whether there is sort of a middle ground position that Republicans can take and stop some of the bleeding that they've been having on this issue over the last year and a half. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot about these races nationally if the Republicans do end up doing well in them. And then the other wild card here that's just sort of interesting is that Glenn Youngkin, Virginia's Republican governor, has pretty high approval ratings. He's sort of been the architect of this whole strategy. A lot of people think that he is going to get lifted up as a possible alternative to Donald Trump if there's a good outcome for Virginia Republicans tomorrow night. I think it's too late for that, no matter what happens, but it's definitely going to be in the discussion.
Speaking again with Tom Jensen, and as we wrap up this conversation, we'll turn it back locally really quick. Obviously, we're going to be talking a lot about the local elections tomorrow, especially when those election day numbers come in. But we've got some details now about the 8,000 plus Orange County residents who turned out to vote early, which, again, is a record turnout for odd year local election. Early voting turnout broke the record from 2 years ago by quite a bit. So a lot of excitement, relatively speaking, about this year's local election. What can we glean, if anything, from the early voting numbers that could suggest what we might end up seeing tomorrow night?
Well, Jerry Cohen very helpfully made me a chart showing how much turnout was up during early voting at a precinct level from 2 years ago. And they did not lead to a lot of sweeping generalizations about what's going to happen. There was not a clear relationship between how strong a precinct has historically been for Chalt or how strong a precinct has historically been for progressive candidates and how big of a turnout increase they had. There were four precincts that had notably large increases in turnout. Two of them, Coker Hills and Eastside, I think there's just a very structural reason that they had more than a 60% increase in turnout, which was the start of having an early vote site at the Chapel Hill Public Library. Previously, there hadn't been one in this quadrant of town, so I think that's the explanation there. But the other two interesting precincts that also had greater than 60% increases in turnout were the two closest to campus, the UNC precinct itself, and then the East Franklin precinct that's just adjacent to campus. And I think the very interesting question there is that both of those things could be either very good news for Chalk Slate candidates or could be very good news for Progressive Slate candidates. One of the very mobilized groups in this year's election has been people who live in the historic districts near campus being unhappy with the town council and more inclined to vote for Chalk candidates. Those people live in these precincts, but also students live in these precincts. And Aaron, you did a very good piece last week sort of breaking down the generational divide in this election, where younger people are more likely to vote for more progressive slate candidates, older people are more likely to vote for Chalk candidates. Both of these precincts, more than anywhere in town, are very much a mixture of those two groups that may have very different voting behaviors. So we know that there was a big turnout in both of those places, but we don't necessarily know which side it's going to help.
We'll find out tomorrow night. Again, tune in beginning at 7 o'clock for election night coverage here on 97.9 The Hill. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.